remember. Okay, we had just completed the basic introduction of Qoheleth, wherein he not only took us through his conclusion, which to remind you was Hevel Hevelim, in Yitron, in Zichron, but then we continued to see his personal experiences. And if you remember, he began by giving us a basic outline. I tried to remember what was his first pursuit. Masim. What's the problem with Masim? So then I tried the world of Chachma. What's the problem with the world of Chachma?
There's always more, and it's frustrating.
It's very frustrating, so it can't be, well, again, a goal that man is meant to fulfill. So then I try, Kenny says, and I don't want you to think that I try this out of pure sake of pleasure. I try this for, again, the philosophical pursuit of seeing whether or not pleasure really fulfills man. But what's the problem with that simcha hana'a? Mazose, what does it really do? But that wasn't enough. Because then we saw last week how he's going to elaborate on each of these pursuits. And ultimately, while he elaborates, he tells us in great detail, again, do you remember, I'm the Melech of Yisrael, I could really do this? And he enjoined together with us on his various, he was sharing his various experiences, how he really tried the world of Masim. And he went through, if you remember our list last time, engineering feats and different types of cultural feats. And he changed the system of irrigation, and he changed the economy, and he changed agriculture. But ultimately, he saw that what bothered him then, not only can't I fix everything, he says, then I realized, what's the problem with it?
It'll all be gone.
It's all going to be gone. I mean, I look back and I say, okay, and what are really the long-term benefits? And not only that, but we really see this. And so what if I build a home? Could that home be destroyed? And if that was my life's fulfillment, then what? So then he said, that's why I started to pursue Chachma. And at the beginning, is he very excited with Chachma?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, who remembers? What's the yitaron? What's the advantage of living a life of wisdom? I'm saying this is what the point of living in this world is.
It's like the difference between darkness and light.
Which means what?
That you get...
What is the advantage of the light?
That you know where you're going.
I know where I'm going. I can see more. I can enjoy more. I can live a better qualitative life. But then he realizes that doesn't make a difference, living a qualitative life, because what's going to happen with me or to me, together with the foolish one who doesn't know the difference between eating in a healthful manner and the lack of nutrition? Again, so as Hani said, you're just going to die anyway. He says, that's when I began to pursue Hana'a. And at first, now we understand, when he first pursued Hana'a, it seems that he's going to pursue this at a default, saying, okay, Masin didn't work, Chachma didn't work, so, and by lack of any other option, I'm going to try, again, this idea of intellectual humanism. For the sake of meaning in this life, I'm going to pursue pleasure. Any of you have any interesting, exciting stories from your various interviews this week? Yes? Okay.
I asked these two random secular guys, and they both said that Saha, it was really important.
That's the meaning of life. Very nice. Contributing to the country. Which category would you put that under?
Maybe Ma.
For sure, Ma'asim. Excellent. Yep, so what's the problem with that? I'm going to give to my country. That is the goal of man in this world. Can anyone dismiss that based on the arguments that Qoheleth already raised?
Once you're done giving, once you're done with army, what do you do?
Very nice. Once I'm done with army, so I could just say, I'm going to sign up for life. Okay, what's called Keba.
And then what happens one day, you Shalom is like a conqueror.
Okay, very nice. So what's you do to your country? Who's to say that your country is going to be around? Look at the history of the world. Yep, that's one dismissal. Another rebuttal.
And you can also say, people that you're saving, they're going to die anyway.
Thank you. I don't want to mean that's on your country. So as I say, it's not about the people, it's about the ideology. I'm there for the ideology of my country. Right? For nationalism. How do I know that nationalism, even though there are people who believe this, how do I know that nationalism cannot be the point of my existence? And not only because what Hatassa said, that who's to say my nation will be around forever, but it doesn't have an end. What do I mean by that? So, here's the whole goal of man, to contribute to his country. What should he do? And everything, 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 but is there an end to it?
No.
No. In which case, can you call that man's goal? We've already seen if it's not really something that can be accomplished, you have to, then that can't be. Then what man is here to do. Excellent. So now he says, I decided to pursue pleasure. And if I pursue the pleasure, I realize that, and this is actually what God wants. Who remembers? Why does he come to the conclusion of, God wants man to enjoy? It's the whole day. Remember, it's the sinner who's going to hoard and going to save and going to give karbanot to Hashem, get to Elohim. Excuse me, right? God doesn't want that. God gave it to you to enjoy. How does he know that?
Because you know, why would God give us the things he wanted
that? That's exactly it. It's beautiful. So he says, if God gave it, then that's what we're supposed to do. And if you remember the very end of last week's shiur, I had, who was it? Are you read? That's right, thank you. For everything, there is a time, and there's a specific time for every chayfet, meaning for every person, for every object, there is a time. What does he mean by this, there is a time? So he said there's a time that something is supposed to happen. What is this philosophy called? I believe that?
Determinism.
Determinism. Excellent. So here, in order to really understand determinism,
Eraser
and marker. So you're on the Davin for Rifa Bat Rachel? That's an easy one to remember. Mm-hmm. Right? Imahot over here. Okay. And now we're going to see that the philosophy of determinism is a very specific philosophy rooted in other ideas. So what he's going to propound now is that the whole world is really deterministic, meaning that everything has been pre-fated, right? Predetermined for man. Now, this philosophy is rooted in another philosophy known as deism. Right? Did you learn about this?
Yeah.
Right? Deism is a belief in a deity. What's a deity? A god, a power that created the world and then very nice, right? Set the clock in motion and basically left. Now, left doesn't mean that this deity is no longer in the world. It means that the deity doesn't necessarily respond to the actions of man. That there's a power, basically, set the world in motion, which means that if something is going to happen, like all of you writing right now, it was predetermined that you were going to do this, right? It was predetermined that Ava is going to and curl her hair right now, right? Meaning that was set, looking for anything. Again, that was set in motion way, 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 way back when. Right? And that's, again, a plausible understanding. There is a power stronger than all of us. That created maybe even multiple powers is what was believed in the pagan world. And ultimately, everything then is going to be set in motion. The different philosophy, again, which certainly Judaism goes under, is known as theism. Theism is a belief in the theos, which is a god who does what?
Intervenes.
Thank you. Intervenes and responds to the actions of man. So what type of philosophy will stem from theism? This will be known as theodicy. Right? The means through which God responds to the acts of man. Or in Jewish philosophy, it's known as Torat Hagmur. Right? How God basically will respond, will be gomel against Harba Onesh. And a deity is there a system of schar ba'onesh in the philosophy of deism? It doesn't make a difference. Whereas in a theistic philosophy, if God is involved in the actions of man, and the question, there are numerous theistic religions, Islam, Christianity are all theistic. The question is going to be, to what extent does God respond to the actions of man? How do we understand Tzadik Berlalo, Rasha V'Tovlo? Just keep that in mind. But now he's going to be exploring, Kohelet says, you know what, I need to think that this world has been predetermined. Now, can I really, to a certain degree, can I really undermine this philosophy? No. Again, for all I know, there was a deity who set things in motion and everything that happens is really just playing out. In which case, what's our role in the world?
To go through the motions.
Very nice, to go through the motions, right? To play out that role. Right, so again, I'm going to ask how many of you have seen the Truman Show?
Yeah.
Excellent. And that's to a certain degree what the producer was doing to Truman, right? He basically had his whole life planned. Right, so do you remember what happens? Truman falls in love with the redhead, right? But that wasn't what was in the script. So what does the producer have to do? He has to get the redhead off the show and instead have Truman fall in love and marry
the blonde.
So he says, does he really fall in love with the blonde lady? No, but that's okay, because there's no such thing as love in a predetermined world. It's just a response to emotions that ultimately is going to have him marry the blonde girl. And what does he do? He just responds to everything around him that's been predetermined, right? She holds up the cereal box, and what is he supposed to say? He's been conditioned to this. Oh, wow, right? Say, yes, would you like, I don't know, whatever the cereal was for breakfast, right? Do you remember the scene that I'm talking about? And lo and behold, then everything is really just determined. What Truman does is more or less respond to all the events around him. And that's a great life. That's why everyone loves watching it. Because look how ideal this is. So notice what happens now.
Thank you.
Thank you. So note now what you're going to see in Kohelet, which is written in what we call the form of a Shira Mikra'it, of a textual song in Tanakh. Now, firstly, before we explore the contents of the song, when I see a particular structure, I have to ask myself, what is the significance of the structure? Meaning, Anna, what is the Shira coming to tell me in form? So firstly, if I ask you, what are the different Shirim in Tanakh? And Sharon of Chazal discussed this in Masechet Megillah. Why do you think they discuss in Masechet Megillah? Megillah, again, talking about Megillat Esther, not only has a song, but also is going to end up discussing how we write a Megillah versus a Sefer Torah. Excuse me, in specific halachot of a Sefer Torah, of how we write things in the Sefer Torah. So sure enough, Chazal tell us that when you write a Shira and a song in the Sefer Torah, it has to be written in a certain way. Who remembers? How is a Shira written? So Chazal say either Livna al Gabei Ariach. What's a Livna? A brick. What's an Ariach? An Ariach is an Evan, is a stone. Brick, stone, brick, stone, brick, stone, brick, stone, brick, stone. Or Ariach al Gabei Ariach. Or a stone on a stone on a stone. Like this in columns. So even though we're familiar with various Shirim, Chazal say there are certain Shirim that are going to be written as a Shira. Can anyone tell me what are the Shirim that you're familiar with in Tanakh? Shira Tayam. And tell me if it's written as a Livna or Ariach. Oh, very nice. Shira Tayam. Beautiful. What else?
Ha'azinu.
Excellent. So Shira Chana, it doesn't even say Shira, it says Batit Palel Chana Aliba, and it's not written as a Shira. So,
Ha'azinu.
Shaina Shirat Azinu. How is Shirat Azinu written?
Ariach Agabe.
Ariach Agabe Ariach. Mitzumyan. What else? You learned Sefer Yehoshua yet? Mitzumyan. Yehoshua Perak Yud-Bet, known as Shirat HaMelechim. Yehoshua sings the song of all the kings that have conquered. And it's written in a column form also. Look at Yehoshua. Perak Yud. And Yud-Bet. Anna, how about the end of Sefer Shmuel? When David finishes conquering, when he finishes all the conquests of the various lands around him and is able to secure the borders, he writes a beautiful song. Again, Shira David, it's known as. Again, a thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for enabling him to conquer all of his enemies. Any other song I mentioned, Megillat Esther. Any song?
Of the sons of Haman.
It's known as, and it's actually called Shirat Aseret B'nei Haman. Beautiful. So some of you are supposed to say, wait, I know of other Shirim in Tanakh, like Parshat Chukat Shirat HaBe'er, Inu Be'er Anila. Right? So why isn't that here? So if I look at the common denominator of all of these Shirim, what is it? They are all what? It's true, but what aspect?
They're like praises.
They're all praises of Hashem for what? For, thank you, for a national military victory. You see that these are all national military victory songs. Even Shirat Hazinu talks about how we will come into Eretz Yisrael, conquer, we're going to be kicked out of the land, and ultimately we're going to come back, v'chiper admato amo. And the land basically will atone for the people, and we're going to come back here. Again, which also sees our all national military victory songs. Even Shirat Aseret B'nei Haman, I don't picture it even more as a march. Ve'et barshan tata ve'et barzata ve'et zayitata l'aseret B'nei Haman. Again, it was probably sung during the time of Mordechai and Esther. You probably had some type of you know, of march or chant or cheer into this as well. Now, what's the difference between these two different ways of writing? So if I look at the Magabe Ariach versus Ariach Agabe Ariach, which one is stronger? Meaning, how should I build my home, right? A bayit, which is, as you know, a stanza in Hebrew, right? A bayit is what basically comprises a shir. So how do you build a bayit? What's a stronger bayit? Brickstone or stone?
Brickstone.
Definitely brickstone, right? Much more secure. So Sharna Chazal say, the stronger national military victories, like Shirat Hayam, where an entire Egyptian army was destroyed, Shirat Vora, 7 out of the 12 Shirat Zim are going to participate here, and we're finally going to get rid of the Canaanim. Shirat Zapir, all of the borders around the Eretz Yisrael are finally going to be secure. This is a Livna Agabi Ariach. The lesser forms of victories, namely Shirat Zazina, which also talks about how Yisrael are going to be kicked off from their land, Shirat HaMelechim, which was only a partial victory for Yoshua in the sense that they were able to conquer the larger cities, but they didn't actually conquer the villages yet. So it's only the beginnings of the victory. And certainly, can you prove to me that Shirat HaSer B'nei Haman is also a lesser national military victory? What happens to the Yehudim in Paras? They're still second-class citizens under the Persian government. They still have to pay taxes during this time. And therefore, what we see is that this is, again, a very conclusive division of Chazal that's apparent through the structure. So even if I don't know exactly what type of song it is, as soon as I see it written in columns, I know it's a weaker song. So now I turn to Kohelet, and I say, well, it's written in columns, weaker song. Is this a national military victory song, though? Definitely not, and that's why it's not on the list. It's not on the list in the Sechem Megillah either. So much so that earlier Kitvei Yad, if we look at early manuscripts of Tanakh, like the Leningrad edition, which is now found in the British Museum, we find that the early editions of Kohelet were, again, Paragimel, is written like regular psukim, not like a shir. And rather, the reason why later editions are going to write it this way is because their claim is rhyme and meter. So you're going to help me over here. And we're going to try to figure out, both in form and in content, what's going on. So let's start off. How many batim are there? How many stanzas are there? Before even looking at the content. Kena, I have from basically Pasuk Bet Ruchet. I have. So the stanza will end with the Nekudotayim, with the Sof Pasuk.
This is
not like the others. So you should know what a Shiraz Hanach is. This really doesn't fit it. So I have it written as one. It was only a later convention to write it this way, because there clearly is some type of rhyme and meter here, but I want you to realize that it is not a real Shira Nikra'it. That's right, in the sense of not being a national military victory song. How many stanzas?
Seven.
Mitzvian. Seven stanzas. What do you know about the number seven in Tanakh in general? This is a natural cycle, meaning this is very set and structured. How many clauses in each stanza? And four clauses, right? And each of them are parallel one to the other, right? Do you see this? So I have two lines, four clauses, seven stanzas, and they're all perfectly and perfectly aligned. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're all necessarily opposites, one after the other. We'll see exactly what they are. We're going to chart the structure of the contents as well. But let's take a look and try to understand what you're saying. Eight lalezet, the eight lamots. What does that mean? Is that what it says in your English translation?
Yeah.
Really? So is it time to be born?
Yeah.
So that's, I'll be honest, not the exact translation in biblical Hebrew. What does lalajat mean? Time to give birth. Right? What is he trying to say? It's a time to give birth. And Ritz Hashem, b'shatova. And now when you're going to ask your mother is, okay, Ina, how do I know when I'm in labor? And what are you going to say to your daughter?
You'll know.
That's exactly it. Just get ready. That's exactly what your mother's going to say. You'll know. Emma, I can't tell you. Again, even though the sonographer or the gynecologist said it can come, a student of mine called me today, said, oh, I remember she had told me, again, a few months ago that she was expecting. So I said, Rachel, what month are you in? Are you in your fifth or sixth month? She said, actually, I'm in my ninth month now. So I said, when are you due? She said, well, My due date is technically in 2 weeks, so what does that mean? That's what she said. She said, I mean, that means that I couldn't give him birth yesterday. I could give birth today, and I could also give birth in a month from now, right? So, again, when will she know that she's really giving birth? Mm-hmm. When it comes, that's exactly it. And on the most basic, I would say even the most basic level of this is that you have no control over when you're going to give birth. I'm smiling because I'm going to tell you a story that taught me that you have no control over giving birth. Hopefully there's either going to come a time when the midwife or the doctor is going to tell you, push, right? And basically the only thing you can do is push, right? And that's exactly it. You have no real control over this, right? Either you push the baby out or the baby will just ultimately push itself out after many, many, many more hours, right? So you may as well just help it out, by the way. But back to this, Anna, what is the speaker here trying to say to you? If you remember from last time, I said, now we're going to start our rounds of debates. And Ava told us she was on the debating team. And the way that a debate works with presenting your platform while you're standing on your platform, do you remember this? So this is the intellectual meaning, and she wants to prove to you that man's meaning in life is ultimately to enjoy. How is he going to prove it? He's going to say, because look at this world. The world is so structured. The world, again, eight l'kol chayfetz. There's a predetermined time, which means that I don't really make any choices. I don't really have an effect on the world. I'm just supposed to live through this world. Even something so essential, you would say, like giving birth, guess what? I don't even have control over that. It's been a predetermined time that, yes, on such and such a date, at such and such a time, contractions are going to start whether you like it or not. I'm going to tell you. And I really, this hit home very strongly. It took me 5 births till I really, Anna, appreciated this clause in the pasuk. Anna, until that point, most women, by the way, I don't know if you know, they give birth when? Most women. Mm-hmm. Sorry, in terms of the hours of the day. Sorry. Mm-hmm. What time? Mm-hmm. At night or?
Early.
Like early in the morning. Why? Anyone know? Because your body has to be somewhat rested, right? Because it's going to need the strength for the pushing. So the body knows. Oh, right, she's rested a little. Excellent time for contractions to start. That's about to happen. My oldest 4 children are all born between 2 and 6 a.m. Anna comes along, child number 5, and this is very funny, because with all the other children, we didn't know what the gender was. I say there are very few surprises in life. And this time, my parents, and were by a niece's wedding in Seattle, Washington, and they were nervous that in case it's a bris, they didn't know, should they leave right after the chasana, should they stay for shechet brachos? So they asked me to find out the gender. So I found out that, again, I figured surprise in life versus kibbut of a aim. Which one went out?
Kibbut
of a aim. So I found out that it was a boy, and ultimately they give you a due date, which is based on both your last menses and also the growth of the baby that they can track through the ultrasounds. So usually, even that can be anywhere between a day and 2 weeks off. Lo and behold, with this child, the ultrasound date and the, let's call it the Beser Acharon, the last menses date, matched exactly. But still, what does that mean? Is anyone really born on their due date? Any of you born on their due date? Yeah, talk about weather. I had one child born 2 weeks before, another child born 2 weeks after, another child 6 weeks before, 6 days before, another child 12 days after. So again, it doesn't really. And so I said, okay, this is more or less the date. The date was Zion Tammuz, which also worked out July 7th. That's a great thing. So it was Zion the 7th. Isn't that cute? Like everything. And I tell her, okay, never really happened. So what did I do? So I decided it's the summer. There are a lot of summer learning programs. So I agreed to teach basically until the due date, thinking if I give birth before the due date, then I give birth at night anyway. So what could I always do? I could send my husband as my substitute. Isn't that nice? Maybe in a few hours after, maybe go and teach. And if, but I never give birth, really so close to the due date. So, and then from the due date on, I'll basically be on Chushat Leitah. And this way, and don't have to worry. That lo and behold, it's the beginning of July, July 1st, July 2nd, and I'm starting contractions. So what did I tell myself? Emma, I can't give birth now, why not? Because I made commitments that I was going to teach Torah. So I remember this, it was yesterday. Did you do this with any of your children? I remember turning to the baby and saying, You can't come out yet. He was just not ready. It's not time yet, again, for you to be born. Right? So just stay inside. So like the first three times, this actually worked.
And it's July 2nd, July 3rd, and the contractions start again. Anyone know? And some people know this. Anyone know how to stop contractions? Or what slows down contractions? I'll tell you a little secret as well. You drink a little wine. Not a lot. Again, a little bit of wine. So I said, I can't give birth right now. And lo and behold, what would happen?
Contractions.
So this day, this is my one child who loves drinking wine. lo and behold, it's the day before and their contraction. I said, oh, I'm such a bucky at this already. I know what to do. Don't come out. Drink the wine. Everything's fine. It's July 7th, it's the due date. And I was scheduled basically to teach until about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm driving into Yerushalayim to deliver. And to deliver a lecture together with a gynecologist on endometriosis and halacha. And I have the slides. This is before you had a conference. I have the slides with me. And I'm driving in, lo and behold,
contractions.
Like at 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, contractions are starting. So I called up the doctor. I said, I just want you to know that contractions are starting, but not to worry because I've been under control. I'm going to do just fine. I didn't have any wine in the car, but I started drinking a lot and just, you know, like playing music, you know, to relax the baby. No, stay there just a few more hours, you can do it. And I remember coming out of the tunnels and I was timing the contractions and what's going on. Now they're regular. So I called him back. I said, okay, here's a story. I can talk. Okay, but I'm just warning you that this may be the onset of fever. So he's a gynecologist. So what does he say? That's okay, labor can last
hours.
He says, worst comes to worst. We were supposed to give the lecture on the fourth floor. Anyone know? The Meshian Leda department in Shari Tzedek is on the as it used to be on the sixth floor, now it's on the ninth floor. Yeah, that's when it's on the sixth floor. And you'll just go up 2 flights and have the baby. Little problem in Eretz Yisrael, but I think it works this way in Chutzlar. It's also you register at a hospital, just so that the hospitals know like how many women to expect. So I wasn't registered in Shari Tzedek. All my information was registered in the northern part of the city by Hadassah Haaretz Sofim. So I said, okay, stay there. And I was still talking. I was, you know, breathing between contractions. I said, okay. Lo and behold, I get to the light after the tunnel, you know, coming out of the tunnels from Gush Etzion. And this is the point. Okay, do I make a right to Haaretz Sofim or do I make a left to Shari Tzedek? I said, it's okay. I can do this, right? The contractions have always stopped, and I never give birth during the day, and I never give birth. On my due date. So, and I already have a chazaka for this, so everything's going to be just fine. But as I'm approaching the Shari Tzedek parking lot, my contractions are 2 minutes apart. So I called the gynecologist. I said, I don't think I'm going to make it. So he says, so just come inside. I said, no, because I'm registered. He said, you may not make it to Haaretz Sofim. So I said, no, it's okay. The regular contractions, it can still be a little while. So I hand him the slides. I turn around, I call my husband. I said, okay, I'm on my way to Haaretz Sofim. He meets me by the tunnels. I park my car. We get to Haaretz Sofim. 9 minutes later, Shmuel's views. And what did I learn? This is right, so I don't forget. I'm not just talking, it's so quiet because I only had women getting birth during the day. I told myself, she said, you are so ready to give birth. And I never turned to my husband and say, now I understand people with it. But the story's not over. I told her I was supposed to teach. So in Shari Tzedek, they know I'm not making it to Shari Tzedek. I was supposed to teach in an adult women's summer learning program. And for those who are familiar with Matan, so I pick up the phone to let Matan know this is right after the baby was born. So it's now whatever it is, 9 o'clock in the morning. I was supposed to teach there at 10:30. So I called up, Mamish, I'm still in the delivery room. I called up to let them know that I won't make it, you know, I'm sorry. And at that point, I didn't want to send my husband. I wanted my husband to stay with me, so you know, if they can make an arrangement. So the person who was arranging the summer program was a high school student who was under a lot of pressure. And I said, you know, this is just the way I begin many conversations. I said, I'm so sorry. I won't be able to make it in today. And I just want you to know, I just gave birth. I had a baby a few minutes ago. And I was just, then I just started, what do you mean you had a baby?
now what are we going to do? How can you do this? That's the truth. As I was thinking to myself, also, this is so. I said, you know what? You're right. It's a little irresponsible of me. Dealing with something that it's completely out of your control. I said, if I could have scheduled it a little better, believe me, I would have scheduled it for 4 o'clock this afternoon. Right, but this is when the baby decided to come out, and I felt I had to give her a lesson in safer Camilla. So that's my big love of experience. Basically, again, that's also you cannot control. Don't try to stop your contractions, because when they come, they come. And as a matter of fact, what do you say to an expectant mother? What do you wish?
Shatabashat.
What does that mean? Whether it's going to be in week 24 or week 40 or week 42, it should be at, and what do we mean by that? At the right time. Right? What's the right time? So here we see, what is the Nehen time saying? What's the right time? The time is whatever was predetermined. So lo and behold, what do I say? It was predetermined for this child, lo and behold, to be born on his due date. Again, Zion time was July 7th. You can all mark this so you can wish him a happy birthday. And ultimately, this is what he's saying. So too, just like you cannot control the time that you give birth, so too, you can't control it. By the way, why doesn't he say? And eight, it doesn't say here, eight, as we said, to be born. What would that be? Eight. Mihi valid. Why not?
It's funny because in English it does.
Not in the NGPS version. You have the GPS?
Not yeah, I do. It says being born.
That's not a biblical Hebrew correct translation. The correct would be a time to give birth.
Also, why? The GPS says for being born.
Ah, for being. So if you look carefully, again, a time.
Giving birth.
Of giving birth. Thank you. And ultimately, what is the idea here of not, why not to be born? Because a little infant, he wants to say, isn't in control of anything. But as an adult, as a birthing mother, don't think that you control that. Right? Something that you think, oh yeah, the mother decides, no, you don't. Just as eitz lamut, something that we know all too well, unfortunately. Right? People who leave the house and then chas v'shalom are in a fatal car accident. And people say, If we only knew, we wouldn't have had an argument that morning. If we only knew. And we wouldn't have sent him out, you know, on a rainy day, whatever the case may be. And you do not control when you die. And therefore, because you don't control it, it must be that it's been, whatever was here before, again, predetermined. You ready for this? Let's continue. They look like opposites, but you're going to see they're not all opposites. There's a time to plant and a time to uproot. What does he want to say? When do you plant? Why do you plant? Do you decide, oh, I'm going to move to plant. I'm going to plant. Is that how planting works?
No.
Thank you. You're basically just responding to stimuli. You're responding to the seasons. How many of you have read Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath? Yes, remember the first scene, right? There's a drought. And the farmers, again, wet their fingers, and remember, it's a very boring scene with the turtle, right? And what are they testing for? They're testing for some wind, because we can't plant until there's some wind, right? The idea is that even when we plant, we don't stop plant. We wait for a certain time, a certain season, a certain wind, and we just respond to that. So to eglat kor natua, are you going to go out right now and just uproot your plants? No, not unless. Okay. It's the right time. So that proves to us that the world works based on certain predetermined times. Who's in control of seasons? Can you decide today that you want it to be a bright, sunny, 70-degree day? No, that's up to God. That's exactly it. And just like these basic ideas have all been predetermined, and we just respond. Even, by the way, on the most basic level. How did you decide what to wear today? So what would the mentan say? You didn't really decide. What did you do? You just responded to the weather, which makes you a very, very passive person. Right? Do you see that? Let's continue. Eat laharog. Get ready for this. What does he say? Even something like killing. Do people really choose to kill? No, it must be that if you killed, it was because
it's predetermined.
It was predetermined that you were going to kill. And this, by the way, people really do, I hate to say this, but they claim this in court. Generally, it'll go under, like, insanity. Right, but he was just responding to some earlier trauma that he had. But that's exactly it. Maybe it's true. Very often people get off because of this. Right? Unlike Kant's categorical imperative. No, no, you always choose, and this is something long marveling under all circumstances. And here the Nensan says, no, there are people who just respond this way. They either pull. Notice this isn't the opposite of killing. Rather, there's a time to heal. Again, people heal when people are sick, meaning we're just responding to this.
But according to this idea that someone was talking about, then does he think that his like existential crisis was predetermined also, that all the things
were sure. That he was supposed to go through these stages and he was just responding to them.
So none of his choices to experiment with different things were his own choice, they were all preordained?
So he believed that exactly, but it was his choice. He was meant, and that's why once he was disappointed with one, it was just natural that he was going to respond by pursuing something else. Yes, very well said. Don't worry, you will dismiss this shortly, but now we're in this philosophy. Yes, and I'm glad that you're looking at it on a more global level. Yes? Yeah, he's like, everything in mind. Right, which, on one hand, seems rather passive. The truth is
it's
very comforting. That means I don't have to decide which midrashah to go to or which college to go to. Why? Very nice. So when you filled out applications or didn't fill out other applications, what would the Nansan tell you? Very nice. It was pretty. You determined for you, meaning you were. So you're supposed to say, but I wouldn't have gone into Shalvim unless I showed up for my interview with Rabbi Goldsmith. Very nice. That's exactly it. Meaning I just responded. I filled this out because I know that this is the process through which we're all predetermined to go through things, but this is what I do. And ultimately, it was already predetermined. So the truth is that whether I did well on my interview or not did, or did not do well on my interview, would that really have made a difference?
No, it's predetermined.
Whether I wrote a very complex essay or not, and it doesn't make such a difference.
You can't.
I still think you're a person. Very never. Again, 1 minute, you're not the chorus. Again, why not?
How does he even think? Why does he
even
not suggest
this? Because why not? Is this a valid way of looking at the world?
Yeah.
I don't mean religious from guidelines.
No, I mean,
can one potentially start?
Is people who live as determinists?
So what are you going to do? He's going to prove in the end how you're going to get things done. Don't worry.
But even if, let's say, things are predetermined, like, you don't know what they're predetermined to be. So you still have to do, like, you still have to make the choices.
And that's so crazy. When you make a choice, it's not a real choice. It's an illusion of a choice.
But, like, by the way, at the moment, like, you don't know.
You have to go through actions. But ultimately, like Truman, right? When you did it, there wasn't a real choice. Why? It was really written, right? It was written down that you were going to do this already. Did you see this? You know, you think you're making a choice, but you're really not.
So,
we're not. No, don't worry, we're going to dismiss this and figure it out. But I want you to understand this on a deep level.
No, I just think that whatever.
You ready? I was going to get into, someone asked me this today, and I said, hi, don't worry, of course we're going to talk about... Are you excited? So it would have been nicer last week, right? L'chlo and Parshas Chayisara. But it's okay. Again, what does this mean? What does that share? In Yiddish. It's a Yiddish word. What does it mean?
Predetermined match.
The chosen one.
The predetermined match.
The chosen one. Chosen by whom?
God.
When?
Born.
Again, according to Chazal, even?
Before.
Very nice. Before your neshama.
Chosen.
Diana, are you even reopening the first 40 days of the inception of a neshama? How do you like that? You, this neshama, is going to end up with that neshama. So, do we, Diana? Or how many of you believe in the concept of that word? That's it. Okay. Again, but you've heard about this concept. Is it so far into Judaism? Which means that when you're choosing... your life partner, think about this, when you're choosing your spouse, your chassan, according to this, you're not really choosing him. Why?
He's chosen.
So how do you understand this? He is chosen. So really, like, no matter what, right? You can move to the Himalayas, and yet still, like, you'll marry this.
I mean, just way to avoid it, but, like...
Really?
But if he's chosen,
you're never gonna know.
What about
him? How
would
you ask
him?
Oh, I
know.
But also,
then, because the person you ended up with. Now, obviously, there are a few questions that always
come out.
What happens if you get divorced?
I feel there's a matter.
So then it's believed that it was Bashir that you were supposed to marry man number one, and then eventually man number two, meaning you wouldn't have gotten to marry number two unless you first married man number one. I think there are answers. But, okay, wait, remind me. Shoshana, right? I shouldn't forget. Thank you. Anna, so Shoshana, do you see? You said, oh, this is such a foreign concept. Oh, really? Anna, Bashir, this isn't a foreign concept.
No,
this is a belief that there's a predetermined that some of our choices aren't really choices. But when Akala says, yes, I will marry you, she thinks she's making a choice, but really, is she? It's been predetermined. Yeah, that was the Shoshana that you're supposed to live with. So how do you understand this? So, firstly, we will talk about this. So I asked how many truly believe in this concept of Bashertz, meaning that there's one person, one neshama, that you're supposed to be with. And again, raise your hands.
I feel like there's a lot of different ones.
Just so I can get like a certain sense. How many of you don't believe? That's a nice way to ask. How many of you don't believe in the concept of Bashertz?
I think Kat. Can it be that there's somebody that you're very compatible with that you can be with, like,
happily?
First, you should know that there are many Kabbalistic philosophers who don't believe in this concept. Most believe that. And is there a certain level? I'm just going to let you feel through just for a moment. What do I mean by that? In Judaism, do we adopt predeterminism at all? You tell me. And what will we call predeterminism? Faint. Right? What's it called in Hebrew?
Can we believe that?
Meaning, Bashertz, more or less, equals go round. Do we believe in this concept of go round, that there are certain things that God has predetermined for us?
But then it's really just an illusion. That's like why Bechira is so.
Any of you hear about the Jewish philosopher Franz Rosenzweig? So he adapted this idea that really a lot of this world is predetermined, and when you make a choice, it's just an illusion of a choice that man needs to think that he's really, but you're really not choosing. And that it really is all go round, right? And there are, other than your spouse, can you tell me other ideas in Judaism that seem to be go round? Okay. Sorry? Okay, maybe your family, the number of children you have, the types of children you have, whatever the case may be. You have to have Anna, what else, by the way? There is a concept of fate. We believe that certain things are fated for us. So when you say that predeterminism is so far into Judaism, it's not so far in. At the same time, though, we also believe in Ye'ud. What's Ye'ud?
Destiny.
What's the difference between fate and destiny? Are you already shown with destiny? That's all they took?
Yeah.
Excellent. What's the idea of destiny? Destiny means that
you can control
some aspects of it. Right? So even though there are mazalot, even though there are predetermined constellations that will determine whether it's the weather or will determine what your family will be, you could actually change that. And that's one of the kochot, that's the idea of Yom Kippur. Your goal is, you should have ended up like the Azazel, but you can change it. You can, and to a certain degree, maybe you can choose your own adventure. What do I mean by that, too? Any of you read the Choose Your Own Adventure stories? Right, what is it? Really, the book is all pre-written, right? An author wrote it, and you're not going to change a single word in the book. But what can you do? Very nice. That all of us can read it, and we'll come out with it's a very different story, meaning I get to choose if I'm going to turn to page 26 or to page 58. And will the story sound very different then? And then from page 58, I can decide whether or not I'm going to turn to page 101 or continue on to page 65. Right, do you see all this? So to a certain degree, that's what we believe in. So with regard to the concept of Bashir, right, what do I believe? Something that many believe, and that is that there are a few. Again, what I mean by a few, somewhere between like 5 and 10, right? About 7
so
very compatible people out there for you. Then flourish and match and get along and have a lovely, wonderful marriage. And now, what's going to decide whether you end up with chatan number one or chatan number 10? That's up to what? Up to the choices that you make. For example, if you decide to go to, again, to New York and to attend Stern College or Queens College in New York, chances are you're limiting that pool of men to whom? To and chances are you will meet. Again, one of those. You decide to, during the summer, again, to go to YU's program, and they go to all these interesting, in Haiti. That's right. So it could be that you may meet someone right on that trip, and it shows that you have similar goals and similar interests. Can you decide that you're going to stay Shana Pip, Gimel Dalet, you're going to stay in Eretz Yisrael? Chances are you're going to marry someone. Thank you. And now it could be that he's from Switzerland, like I said. But the fact that they met in a cafe in Israel shows you what? And they have common goals, and they both want to be here. You see this? I always tell guys, I say, I know a lot of the mothers are nervous when their daughters make Aliyah before they're married. Right, Beth? They love being in Israel. I always say, chances are, where's her new bashert? Mm-hmm. Could she marry someone in there? Yeah. But then it wouldn't be someone who would necessarily share the goals of building a life in Eretz Yisrael together. So chances are, I can tell you, Meretz Hashem, I'll set you guys up. That's how you're Bashar and Sears. This is where you want to be. Do you see that? So do you choose? This has happened to you. You go to your teacher's houses for Shabbos. Within 5 minutes, what's one of the first questions you ask them?
Isn't that
interesting? And I like flying. To be honest, I find that so strange. You don't want to know anything. You know my children's names. They're asking me, again, how we met, but why is it? But I'll be honest with you. I understand it. Why is it that you ask this?
It says a lot about like your past.
First question you ask is, how do you and why? Tell me why. I can tell you, I've done this statistically. Girls ask within 5 minutes. How do you meet? And why? Because it's fascinating. What's so fascinating about people's meeting stories? They don't even ask. Like, how did your husband propose to you? What's so fascinating about it?
Well,
that's
like crazy stories.
But they're all crazy stories. Right, like, I went out with him 3 years ago, but I didn't really like him. And then I went out with him, 3 years later, and we broke up again. And then, my gosh, I'm teaching a Kala, and this is what happened. Dennis, she was living in England. He was living in England. They were going out over there, and it didn't work. He made Aliyah. She was still in England. Someone else from a totally different place suggested it. So when he went back to visit his family, they went out again, and it didn't work. Then really just last year, she made Aliyah, and they met at a Simchat Bat, and suggested, you know, we want to go out again, they're getting married next month. So, I noticed this, but it's a little freaky, why? It's so clear that they were like, spooks ends up together, either on that continent or this continent, do you see this? Or, stories, I love these stories also, I've heard two of these. And a girl was supposed to, this was also from years ago, which is interesting, before cell phones it must have been, but I've heard this even with cell phones. Then a guy is supposed to go out with a girl, every time he calls the room, the girl just isn't there. Like not one or two times, but, so who keeps on answering? The roommate. So the guy finally says, it must be that
I'm supposed to go out with you,
lo and behold. I've heard like five of these stories.
Oh, that's really funny.
I
really did
that.
That
is so funny. And I'm which makes you think that they're going to marry the roommate. Chances are they're roommates because
they're similar.
We could have married the roommate also, but this is what we would call Bashir. Okay, then Hashem, where did I just make sure? No, he ends up with the roommate even though someone's going to live with the other girl. And that's ultimately, again, what do we see here? Or I'm trying to say is that in Judaism there is somewhat of a concept, but to make Shoshana feel better, we also believe that yes, Hashem, he determines our history to a certain degree, but we write history together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, I don't know if you've ever received wedding invitations and looked and analyzed them carefully. And I think I told you this, that I was engaged my year in Eretz Yisrael, like last week, and like this time of year.
You're Shana Aleph?
I'm Shana
Aleph. Oh,
and that's engaged, and at the end of the year, and we left Eretz Yisrael 11 days before the wedding. So as you can imagine, like my parents were more or less planned the whole wedding. I just like stepped into the wedding dress, and all I did was I made a seam on Tanakh, and my husband made a seam on Shach, so like that was our work for the wedding. That was about it. And with the wedding thing, we just want to make sure that there are very good ventures and have all this miros that we like. That was one thing that we said, and we wanted to plan the wedding invitation. Right? So if you ever look at a wedding invitation, it'll say, Anum Lekadriyam Lazmanet Banarla Yineinu Hayi Karim. I'll say, Abraham, did you ever notice this? Sometimes, I will say, Ayin Bet Gimel. What does that mean? In Bat Goralo. Right? So they know a little bit about the couple of Hashkafa. What do they believe in?
Goral.
They believe that Abraham was, by hook or by crook, meant to, by Goral, he was meant to be with Sarah. Then you'll see, sometimes they will say, very nice. In Bechir Libo, in Bechir Liba, what does this couple believe? And I said, it wasn't my shirt, it was our choice, right? Our emotional choice. We decided, right, to marry one another. So, I was thinking to myself, wow, this is a very significant part of the wedding invitation. This more or less, like, expresses what our Shkabas, you know, my husband and I didn't, I've seen this on wedding invitations since. What we did was as follows. We wrote, again, and he is Reuven, I'm Shoshana, so here. Reuven, im, lechir libo, and then, like a ring, right, I just don't draw well. So this was like a semicircle. And then the bottom was in Bechir Liba. Like the lev is always Zachar, so even though some people write it incorrectly, Bechir, Bechirat Libo, Bechir Liba, it's both Bechir. In Bechir Libo, in Bechir Liba. So him with the choice of his heart, she with the choice of her heart. So we wrote it like a ring, like a wedding ring. And in the middle, we wrote Me'et Hashem. But even though it was our choice, there's some aspect of
I'm pretty sure your husband just mentioned that whole thing on the sheer.
I talk about these things.
He also mentions how he loves Kohela.
Was that predetermined or what?
Anna, that reminds me of one last story here. I was Anna, my husband. Anna, for those of you who know him also, he has bekiyot in everything. Bekiyot Shas, bekiyot Tanakh, bekiyot Machshava, and bekiyot songs. Isn't it? Like he knows every classic song, rock song, every song. And if I know any secular songs, it's because of him. So, and people joke, you come to Eretz Yisrael, people stop listening to rock music. I came to Eretz Yisrael, and like he taught me Billy Joel. Okay, in any case, back to this. So, again, there's a song. Anyone knows the song to this? The birds have a song for every season.
Don't sing.
A time to be born. They also translated it. A time to die. A time to laugh.
I think you sang this for us before, did you?
Last week.
I never heard it. I heard of it. Maybe he would sing it. But on the whole, I'm on my way to teach Kohelet Perakimo, and I remember it was Mechlela NCSY, and all of a sudden I turn on the radio to hear the news, and what song comes on? And this is like after 10 years of teaching Kohelet. What song? I have this song. Wow, that's freaky. Why? Because here I'm about to teach determinism, and like, been determined that the song comes on. That's my last paragraph story for you. Okay, now we continue. And basically see, though, that this isn't totally foreign. Question is, how far do you take this? Again, okay, fine, I'll tell you one last story that I really like, because it's my parents' story. And my parents met in a sukkah. And I'm waiting for someone to say, so did mine. No? And on one hand, let's say, yes, my mother is from Seattle, Washington, went to Barnard, my father is grandma, Anna, Crown Heights, and then Flatbush, went to Columbia. And again, what would bring a girl from Seattle, Washington, and to meet this boy from Flatbush? But lo and behold, Anna Hamshbarach, who brings them together? And again, they're engaged, and my aunt is at then the engagement party, and my mother's sister, and she keeps staring at my father. Father says, I know you from somewhere. And he's laughing. He says, yes, you're from Seattle, Washington. Again, you don't really come to New York. And there's no way that you're. She says, no, I'm telling you, I met you before. And she finally figures it out. At my father, when he was a senior in high school, won the Easter. How many of you did the Chidon Tanakh? No. So my father had won his high school's Chidon Tanakh, again what's known as the senior division. My mother won her junior division from the West Coast, and the Nationals are where every year? The Olami are in, the International are in Israel every Yom Ha'atzmaut, but the Nationals are in New York. So they're in New York in the BJE building, and my aunt came to accompany my mother and for the Nationals. So my father's in the senior division, my mother's in the junior division, and my aunt is watching my mother. She gets very bored, so what does she do? Mm-hmm. She goes to watch the senior division. And lo and behold, my aunt had met my father, and her future brother-in-law before her. And she was thinking, that's so strange. You were in the same building for 8 hours together, and during the exact same time, and you didn't meet. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu like brought you back together again. And the same sukkah, whatever it was, 6 years later. And I'm like, isn't that an amazing thing? And I always think to myself, like, wouldn't it have been cool had my father taken, you know, like a little break and gone to the water fountain, and my mother go to the water fountain, and they met each other there. And there will be, again, this little factor. So again, do we believe in Goral? Do we believe in determinism? To a certain degree, just that you shouldn't think that this is so extreme. But we do believe, to make yourself feel better. We believe that we have the Chira, that we write this from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yes. I think so. Okay. Here we go. So now back to Eglis Rhodes. A time to break through. Yeah, versus Eglis Notes. A time to build. And Eglis Kot, a time to cry. So notice this isn't an opposite. A time to laugh. How many of you have pets? Dogs, cats? Turtles. Okay, dog. So does your dog cry?
Yes.
That's what pet owners think. She really funny. Sorry? She whimpers. Very nice. The whimpering, yeah, I can say that. That's right. Right. She's already been conditioned. She knows when she whimpers what's going to happen. She'll get whatever she wants. Right. And but when you see tears by a dog or a cat, scientists have proven that it's not in response to pain. Rather, what happens is that they're just responding to stimuli, meaning when they're hurt in some way, not emotionally hurt, right? They don't get offended. Right? When, fall down or something, or break a leg. So then their nerves, basically are going to synapse together, and that causes tear ducts to swell up. Is that interesting? So, and I'm sorry to disappoint if I did, but and basically, their tears are a mechanical response to stimuli. You see here, so he says, so it is by us. And why do you cry? You think you cry because you chose to cry because you're sad, but really, why do you cry? It was just a response to certain stimuli. So too, Eglis Chot, this is a very good example. Why do you laugh? You choose to laugh.
No.
How many of you actually choose life? If you would choose life, it would probably end up sounding like this. Vanna, what's a real laugh? That's a spontaneous laugh. Vanna, you don't choose to laugh. Vanna, it's just something that you do, which proves that you said and choose it. It must have been that it was predetermined. Do you see this? Ow.
So you will like choose to stop laughing, and then you put
really?
It
in.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
By the way, how do you usually stop laughing?
Think of
something very serious or sad. Change that again. You're not choosing. You're just changing your stimulus. Or forcing. Eighth code.
Sorry. Is something spontaneous?
Predetermined, meaning if it's spontaneous, it means that I didn't choose it. It wasn't, again, meditated by me. Do you see that? It wasn't premeditated, so it must have been predetermined. Yes, the throat is to break down, the throat is to build. I do it also, I respond to whatever surroundings around me. Again, it's food, a time to mourn, versus a precode, and a time to dance. Things I'm also, I just done, meaning I mourn when I heard the bad news. I didn't control this.
What? No, but
why
I
are these two not your inner belongings?
a different style, almost like to break it up a little. Like the truth is, you're going to hear this at the end of both. Because it's the end of a certain time. It's stronger. It's spoke, it's recalled, like eight machama, the eight shalom, versus eight li lachim, the eight lash. It's going to similar like eight lash lich avanim, a time to cast stones out. What would this be talking about? Mm-hmm.
The stones.
Okay. Again, this is to break down a siege versus to gather stones in to build a siege. Chazal understands this also as allegorical for a time to procreate, to have children, and a time to refrain from procreating. Then also, these aren't things that we actually control. Let's continue. A time to a siege, a matzor. Eight lachavok, a time to and sometimes to refrain. I don't necessarily determine it. Eight lavakesh, a time to seek something out. Generally, when do I seek something?
Period.
And I'm curious, or something is lost. Right? Lavakesh means to seek after something that has gone lost. Did I choose that? No. Why do I look for something?
Predetermined.
Meaning I'm just responding to the fact that my car keys are nowhere to be found. Right? The eight la bakesh, and a time to lose. Eight lashmor, a time to preserve. Eight lashlich, a time to cast away. Eight lachroa, time to tear. And that's another good example. I don't consciously tear something. It must have been that it was predetermined, eight lachfor, and I fix it just because
it was broken.
It was torn, and I can even decide. Not to. It's like a shout, a time to be silent, and a time to speak. Do I stay before you speak?
No.
Yeah, predeterminism for you. Mm-hmm. A time to love. Now, according to him, do you love because you choose to love?
No.
Again, back to the Truman Show. And he really did choose to love the redhead, but that wasn't predetermined. So what has to happen to the redhead? You're not working according to script, so we'll get her off the show. And instead, we're going to arrange everything around. I said, everywhere he goes, who's there? The blonde woman. So eventually he figures out, what is he supposed to do? Marry the blonde woman. Right? Do you see this? So in Lahob, there's a time to love. You really choose love. You just, we even use that term, send in love, which is really what makes people believe in the concept of Asher. I disliked you growing up in kindergarten, right? Can you tied my pigtails together. And yet, 19 years later, I'm going to love you. Why?
You're
I don't
supposed
know.
To.
Right? Because I'm supposed to. You must have been. Right? It makes sense this way.
But how do I feel about, like, you know, like, men used to marry more than one wife?
Yes.
Like,
not out of love. Not out of love.
So, well, like, where would ever share it? Was that, like, didn't exist back then? Like, people just...
Or they could say, you could say... It's predetermined that I was supposed to marry you and you and you and you. By the way, and at this whole nature of polygamy, of marrying more than one wife, wasn't as widespread as you think. Why not? Who are the only ones who really married a lot of women?
Kings.
Very wealthy people, because it's very expensive to support a woman. And
all her children.
Right? So people didn't wear it as a status symbol.
Orith. They married a woman out of love. She's the Bashir, but she took care of children. It's over there. He'll marry someone else. I'd say, I guess I was determined that both of you. So now, Eid Lahov, Eid Lesnow, even hate. Do you actually choose? Do people choose to hate people?
No.
No? And it must be, if I really dislike you, it must be, I don't know. Yeah, it must be that. It's not the truth that way. Such words. I don't know most, and I don't know how many of you learned maniac in high school. The different causes for a war, military, alliance, nationalism, imperialism, artillery, and this crisis. And really, what starts a war? The Archduke Ferdinand being assassinated, right? So, so I said, that was predetermined, meaning a lot of things can go on, but maybe we can control that. There's going to be a crisis. That crisis sometimes is so sneaky that you have to say that was predetermined. Here we go. I'm out of the eight shalom. Now, just to show you his points and the structure over here, let's try to graph this together. Let me tell me, if they're not opposites, then what structure is there? Which is the reason why, in the end, later editions wrote this in columns. So you can look at each column. So know that we're going to look on the right-hand column. Just know that the opposite of the notion of the right-hand column will be in the left-hand column. What do I mean by this? Eid laledet, a time to give birth. Meaning something that we said is certainly predetermined that we don't have control over. Is this something positive or negative?
Positive.
Definitely positive. How about, which means that Eid lamut would be negative, right? Again, Eid latat, a time to plant. How would you view that? Excellent. Eid laharog. And Eid lefrot. To destroy as opposed to build.
Negative.
Eid lefkot, a time to cry.
Negative.
Eid spod, a time of mourning.
Negative.
Eid lashlich avanim, a time to break down a siege.
Positive.
I'm breaking the siege down. Very nice. Eid lachavok, a time to hug. Levakesh, to seek as opposed to losing. Lishmar, to preserve versus to cast away. Leproat, to have. To be silent versus to speak. Lehov. And Milchama.
Negative.
Now really I could say it would have been so nicely if I would have had like a positive beginning and a positive end. Do you see that? So I'm going to teach you another rule of poetry in Tanakh. Whenever there's something written as a song, you never end on a negative. Why not? It's just not a nice way to end. So in order for the song to end with Eid Shalom, how does it have to start? The last clause? Eid Mechamat. You see this? But even with this, so we're going to call this the closure. Right? And notice we have a perfect structure. We have two positives over here, two negatives over here, and four negatives and four positives, which means that obviously the other side has the opposite. What is he trying to show here in the structure? It's like I'm making this up. It's like a super duper structured family, right? Two boys, four girls, four boys, two, whatever.
Girls.
Two girls. And then a boy and a girl at the end, right? Is that nice? Ganna, notice this. He's trying to show you everything is so structured. The seven and the two and the four and everything with the trine and meter and beat. Ganna, what is he trying to show? If you look around, this world runs so structured, meaning that, again, history repeats itself, that it must be, what is he trying to tell you? The form equals the content. What is his content? What is he trying to prove? Determinism. So he even composes the song in a deterministic fashion. I could basically, already over here, I could determine what the end of the shir would be. Right? Do you see this? And he's writing it in a super-duper structured manner to show you that this is a depiction of a predetermined world.
I could tell you, it's really okay.
Not Ariella. Talia?
No,
okay.
Aviva.
Okay.
Just a question. But, like, yeah, we said it's not so far from Judaism, but it's clearly, like, very, like, different, and like we all are just like saying like how could that be, like it's so crazy, whatever. So like I feel like he's just kind of saying like people could think this, but he doesn't actually go, like I can't imagine how he would actually
saying
really
it. Did he actually believe it? He writes in a very convincing way. It's hard to imagine. You're right, he's going to dismiss it, which meant long term he did. When was there a stage that he actually believed this? So you can't write it this way unless you really
but what
it.
Do we define a stage? Could a stage be like a minute? Because like I just feel like Like, how long?
Do you ever reach any philosophical conclusions?
Not a minute, but, like, I don't know, for such a long period of time, like, I don't know. Like, we
Same
all...
Time just, got each stage in his life, a year or two or three.
Okay.
Again, it's going to bother Chazal. Oh, my gosh, okay. So Rashi will get... they'll get rid of this problem by saying that it wasn't his thought, it was just quoting, right, predeterminists.
Right.
Right. The Ezra will say, no, this was something that he thought at one stage.
Right. Al, again, just by asking, do you know, Anna, most of Western philosophy today is really based on determinism. It's going to happen anyway, so. And there, even, you know, there are all these, what are they called, the economic forecasters. Okay, do you know this?
Mm-hmm.
And so, some are saying that the stock market will crash again in 6 months, some in 6 years, some in 6 years. One out of the 600 is bound to be right. Do you see this? But if you ask them, right, what are you basing it on, what will most of them tell you? Certain cycles, right, that just happen. Whether he's president or he's president, whether you reform the economic system or don't reform the economic system, will it happen anyway?
Yep.
Here's a good example of this, an earthquake. Okay, no matter what you do, will the earthquake happen?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be able to, again, control damage a little better, but it's going to happen. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this, especially in the Middle East, again, earthquakes happen on average once every 90 years. Very good. Once every 90 years, there's a history of this. And in which case, you have to ask yourself, why? Like, we don't do anything to bring about the earthquakes. And over the course of thousands of years, the cycle of 90-year earthquakes have continued with radiation, with nuclear electricity, again, whatever the case may be, which gives you a sense, okay, it must have been predetermined based on the way that God placed plates under the sea, that this is what's supposed to happen. Do you see this? Meaning there are some aspects of the world that clearly corroborate determinism.
Well, it's like, I remember, like, learning that, like, people, like, who don't, like, historians who, like, want to say that Kiryat Yom Suf wasn't, like, a miracle, they'll just, they feel like every, I don't know how, when it happened in history, whatever, like, the world, that sea will split, like,
Very nice. Now, by the way, Chazal allude to this when they say something like, and, the Pi Ha'aretz that swallowed up Datan Baviram after the rebellion of Korach. That was created when, say Chazal?
Ben Hashmasha.
Ben Hashmasha. So what are they trying to say? They're trying to say that actually it was. Right? And you accept that. Okay, so yes, that there are these philosophies out there. Now, once he's established determinism, now he's going to share with you what the natural result of determinism is. You ready? Pasuk 10. My Yitron Ha'oseh Va'asher Hu Amel. What does he want to say? What is the advantage, then, of the person who does anything, Bashar Huamil, as he invests in this world? What is he trying to say?
And there's no point, because
there's no point in investing. Why?
Because the results can come about anyway.
Okay, nice. It's going to happen whether or not you work hard for it or you don't work hard for it. So you may as well work hard for it. Asher adam. He says, I see this, it's so clear that the world is created in such a way, and Asher natan alukam l'bnei adam la'anotvo, that God gave this world for man, la'anotvo, simply to oppress him. Does this remind you of any pasuk?
Yes.
Excellent. Go back to Paragala, pasuk yudgimel. When he first started his philosophical quest, he also said, al kol asher na'aseh tachat ha'shamayim, hu inyan ra natan elukim l'bnei adam la'anotvo. I see that this is such an evil place, that there is no existential meaning for man in this world, and therefore it must be that God is just putting man through this world to oppress him. Do you remember that? So doesn't that sound like the exact same pasuk? But he leaves something out. What clause does he leave out? He says, okay, it's true. Man just has to get through this world as a passive creature. And man doesn't determine and doesn't cause things in this world, but merely responds. But he says, you know what? It's not so bad. Why is it not so bad? Now I can just take a look. Again, pasuk yud bet. Because now, pasuk yud aleph. Because the world works this way. He made it so nice that, yes, it's true. There are so many things that are determined. There are storms, and there are seasons, and there are the people that I'm supposed to fall in love with. But it all works. And what's the fun part of it? that even though the world is predetermined, I don't know. Even though I know that everything that's going to happen tomorrow has already been predetermined, guess what? I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. How many of you saw Grandpa?
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh
And then, so my brother had a suggest, realizes that. Realizes that he can change certain aspects. Right? That he can actually get better at piano if he takes piano lessons. Okay. In any case, back to this. He says, even though the world is predetermined, it's not boring. Why? God placed in this determined world, he placed it, that man can't figure out what's going to happen. So, I may know that it's predetermined that I'm going to die, but I don't know when. I know it's been predetermined that, again, she may give birth, but I don't know when. So it's still, again, that makes life exciting. Yadati ki ein tova. And therefore I realize that if I can't change anything anyway, because it's all been predetermined, so what may I as well do? Sit back, relax, then. And if we discussed roller coaster rides last week, then again, think about it this way. While I'm standing in line to go on the roller coaster for 2 hours, I can already figure out exactly what the roller coaster is going to do, right? And yet, do I go on the ride anyway? Even though I know it's going to go down here, and then it's going to twirl around, and then go upside down. Why do we go on it? Because I want to experience it. So even if it's all predetermined, and I know exactly what it's going to do, and I don't, in life I don't even know, but I may as well enjoy the ride. Again, that's his philosophy over here. Again, notice that, at this point, really, it makes a lot of sense. And that this is what the Ezrat Hashem is looking at 5 minutes?
No.
Okay. So we're going to end with this. Sorry about this.
5 minutes ago.
So with this, he says, the original philosophy that I ended up pursuing by default because I was so depressed and despaired over the failure of Ma'asim and Chachma, in the end, what do I realize?
It's an ideal
philosophy. And so go, have a good time. No, now, okay, you are leaving your happy course with, so have a beautiful life. And
Shayna, I have your name. I'm not excited. I am. I'm not excited.